the Welcome to Fatherhood podcast. I'm your host. My name is Kelly, and I'm here to remind you, however you're listening and wherever you're listening, that as dads, we're just like moms. Except we're dads. Ha ha! Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
All right, my name is Nate Robinson. As you could probably tell by my accent, I live in Sydney, Australia. I'm a dad of a five-year-old boy. There's quite a bit of an interesting story there, but I'll go into that a little later. I'm originally from Perth, which is on the west coast of Australia.
Okay.
And a cool little fact I like to share is that Perth is actually the most isolated capital city in the world.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah, so it's a small city, you know. It's only a couple of million people. But grew up there. I'm the oldest of five. Mm-hmm. I was married in the past when I was in Perth, and that marriage fell apart, unfortunately. Mm. And throughout that relationship, tried for 5 years to have a child, but mm-hmm. that didn't work. Mm-hmm. And then 2013, I moved over to the East Coast and started a new life for myself after the marriage fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
And life has been good, man. I've got a good partner now. We're engaged to mm-hmm. be married next year.
Hey, congratulations.
Thank you. And like I said, I have a five-year-old son as well. So, yeah, I'm living my best life now.
Yeah. Man, just from everything that you just said, it just sounds like there are so many directions that we can go into. So let me think of a couple of questions to ask. But before acknowledging that you're also a fellow podcaster, and recently yes. I had the opportunity to be a guest on your podcast, Not So Secret Dad's Business Podcast, and I love the work that you're doing. I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation on your podcast. I guess, you know, it would be interesting. We could continue that conversation, but this time from your perspective. You know, from the way things are happening over there. So there's another angle we can go to mm-hmm. today. So many different directions, right? But tell us a little bit more about the work that you're doing on your podcast.
All right. Well, the title, first of all, Not So Secret Dad's Business.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of came from the root that men don't tend to talk openly and honestly with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Everything seems to be a secret,
mm-hmm.
you know, and nobody shares anything. So I wanted to, you know, it's secret dad's business, but in parentheses there, it's not so
mm-hmm.
because it's not a secret and mm-hmm. it shouldn't be a secret. I think it's good for dads to be able to talk to each other openly and honestly about anything, whether it be separations in the relationship, or
yeah.
whether it be the men's mental health, or addiction, or just things that our kids do, and
yeah.
sharing those stories with each other.
Yeah.
So yeah, I decided to sort of kick it off last October, really, and the reason that really got it kicked off was my sister was tired of hearing me talk about this idea of a podcast. So she bought a microphone, bought my first mic, and drove an hour and a half to come visit me and give it to me.
Wow.
And so that afternoon I had everything set up as far as I could and then started making the artwork, as you do, you know,
yeah.
when you start a
yeah.
podcast. And now I'm like 30 episodes deep, man.
Yeah.
So,
hey, shout out to your sister, man. That's dedication right there. I mean, you had no excuses after she showed up with that microphone.
That's right, man. She was, yeah, like I said, she's like, look, it's a great idea, and I'm tired of you just talking about it. Do it. Why aren't you doing it? And like the reason I bounced it around for so long was because, again, men don't have those open conversations with each other. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't think probably, and you probably would have felt the same as well. I didn't feel like it would have gotten any traction.
Absolutely.
I wasn't even sure if anybody would listen.
Absolutely.
Or if anybody would want to talk to me for that
Absolutely.
Matter.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I identify with that. I mean, we spoke about that, you know, before. It's just like, yeah. Who cares about what I have to say, you know? And it was just that getting to that place of saying, you know what? The hell with it. Why am I doing this? Am I doing this so that I can become popular or am I just trying to get my story out there? And while both of them are valid things to consider, for me, at least, it got to the point of, you know, let me just put my experience out there and whoever it reaches, and whoever it doesn't reach, and it is what it is.
That's right. And I mean, at the end of the day, not every episode is going to be for every listener either.
Yes.
Not everyone's going to listen to every single conversation I have. But I mean, there's a lot there that, you know, at least the content's there. If they want it, they can find it and they can take something away from it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think you're giving me more of a clarity for how the remainder of our conversation is going to move forward. Because I really appreciate the philosophy, if you will, of your approach to why you started your podcast. And it's one of those things that is the undertone for why I started this project as well. Because you're right. I believe that, or we share the belief that men do not talk about things that are important to talk about, particularly in our journeys as men, as fathers, you know, husbands, just men in general. So I want to tap a little bit into your marriage before and have you talk about, if you will, during those 5 years that you and your ex were trying, any history of loss? Maybe there was a pregnancy that got started and then it wasn't viable, and how you dealt with that? Or was that not the case?
Unfortunately, it never happened. So at first it was just, we stopped using contraception completely. And we got about, 4 years of having intercourse without protection. And then we realized, wait, we haven't fallen pregnant. Maybe something's wrong. Now, I mean, I'd had medical issues in the past with, you know, my tools, my hardware, so to speak. But my ex-wife, she was also polycystic as well. So we both had something going against us. But then we started doing fertility treatment. And for me, I mean, that's kind of when I checked out, if that makes any sense, because I just felt like, you know, it shouldn't be this hard.
Yeah. Okay. So that's what I want to have you address a little bit more. There is this sense of you, I mean, you're trying. So there is this sense that I want to become a father, right?
Yeah.
But it's just not happening, or it is really difficult. So what sort of things, what sort of effects that had on you as you were trying for as long as you had been trying?
Yeah, well, man, it's like I said on my show when you came to have a chat with me, was that when I was a young boy, all I wanted to do was be like my mom. I wanted to be a parent, you know? And so that's all I've ever wanted to do. So that time trying and realizing it wasn't happening, I thought it was my fault. I thought it was because my body wasn't doing what it was supposed to do. And so Yeah, man. I just, like I said, I checked out, you know, because I felt like I was holding her back, if that makes any sense. And at the same time, I was sort of angry at myself as well, because I felt like I was denying my own body was failing me and denying me of my dream. I've only ever had two dreams in life. One was to be a maintenance engineer in the Air Force, and the other was to be a dad. And both of them in that relationship just fell down around me.
What was Nate's internal voice telling Nate during that process?
Mate, it was a lot of self-degradation. A lot of it, like just putting myself down, like, look at you, you're weak, you're pathetic, you can't even bear children. What kind of man are you? You know, and because I living in Australia, we're stereotypically men's men, you know. And not only that, like my father has 8 biological children and a stepdaughter. So my father's virile. Why aren't I?
Yeah.
You know, so there was a lot to sort of throw around there.
Was that sort of the time that you began to identify that, my God, here I am trying, but I have no one to talk to about this? Or did you have somebody to talk to, but for whatever reason, you just didn't feel like this was something worth sharing or worth making public? Because I can't imagine, I mean, that's an intimate thing, right? Like that's something that, it's not like, hey, come check out my new car, you know, or hey, I applied for, you know, this high paying job and I didn't get it, but at least I tried. I mean, this is something very near and dear and intimate. So what was the ambient like in terms of who you had or who you did not have to talk to? And could you even talk to your dad? Did you feel comfortable talking to your dad?
Well, I did have those conversations with my dad. Now, like both my father and I are alcoholics. And so that was our bonding, you know, was alcohol. Thankfully I'm now 3 days sober.
Woo!
Thank you. But you know, because I want to be a better dad for my son.
Yeah.
But you know, he lived around the corner from me. We never had the closest relationship. We were more drinking buddies than anything, you know. And so I just talked to him, but I'd never get really any feedback or advice. It was kind of me saying my piece and him waiting for his turn to talk.
I see.
You know, and so that helped in a way because I was still saying it out loud. I was hearing the words.
Yes, yeah.
But not getting any of that response, no feedback. It just, it made it hard to sort of work out what to do with anything.
Okay, so aside from your dad, was there any other, did you know any other men who were possibly going through the same thing? Or who had possibly gone through the same thing and you wanted to reach out to?
Not really. Not in the same situation that I was in. I didn't know anybody. But, I mean, I had my best friend of about 20 years, you know, and we had something that we like to call B&B Wednesdays, beer and bullshit Wednesdays. And we would just sit down, have a couple of beers, and we would just talk about what was going on in our lives. So I did at least have that sounding board with him. And but even so, he couldn't relate because he wasn't having those issues. He had a daughter at the time. He has a couple more sons now. But he had a child at the time, and so he couldn't really put himself on my level, mm-hmm. put himself in my shoes and understand, like, kind of where I was coming from.
Yeah. So then, you know, what was it like then? There's this moment of realization. This is not happening. You know, like this is not happening. You're almost at, or not even almost, you're at the brink of this loss of a dream. I mean, that was one of your two dreams ever in life, right? And it just seems like this one that you wanted since a kid, it's not going to materialize. Dude, that must have been like...
Yeah, man. And I mean, my whole demeanor changed. And the relationship turned toxic. You know, we ended up having screaming matches where we would be in each other's face. Spit would be flying.
Wow.
You know, and it got to a point where I started going, well, maybe I'm not meant to have a child because I certainly don't want to bring a child into this environment.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so... the relationship became volatile and toxic and everything. And eventually she ended up finding comfort in another man, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. She didn't end up having an affair, but, you know, there was an emotional connection there between her and this other guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that was basically the end of it. I didn't know about it until we sort of ended up sitting down one day and going, look, this isn't working out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we both agreed that we should part ways. Little did I know at the time, we both agreed on that for totally different reasons.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine the toll that does take on a relationship. And I thank you so much for sharing something so intimate about your story and your journey. Because there is, you know, this podcast is celebrating the journey of fatherhood, but the assumption underneath that is that men are becoming fathers, or men who have become fathers like myself, mm-hmm. right? Whether there is a history of trying for a long period of time, the fact is we became fathers. Mm-hmm. But this fatherhood journey doesn't only include men who have become fathers, but there is a whole population of men who, like yourself at that time, have been trying to become dads. And for whatever reason, it's just not happening. And so the implications of that, right? How that sort of echoes in the chambers of their relationships and their inner chambers. I mean, that just, the reaches of that are just so far and wide, and I don't even have a way to think about what all of that might mean for someone. So you bringing this to light has given me food for thought, and also given a voice to a population, a demographic of men who are struggling or have struggled in that way, and their lives and their circumstances has been altered for, you know, forever, for better or worse. So yeah, thanks for that, man.
And I mean, I'll bring this up now anyway, because with my current partner as well, we're having the same issues. We've been going through fertility treatment, not being able to fall pregnant,
mm-hmm.
and all that sort of thing. And so how I became a dad was just totally off the wall.
Mm-hmm.
for most people anyway. But so
you want to share that story?
I will get to that.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
But what going through what I did before with my previous marriage has sort of given me the experience and the strength to be able to do it again and not become bitter and angry and all of that, you know.
So what has the approach been like for you now? So there was a point in the previous experience that, you know, you were saying all sorts of negative things about yourself. How is this experience being handled internally by you, having had that really negative experience before?
I think it's, I mean, I think more positively about it because I know my body better now.
Okay.
I mean, with my ex-wife, I was still in my early 20s and not really learning about my body, seeing the doctor like I should be and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So now I understand my body better. I can sort of live with it a bit easier.
Mm-hmm.
But again, having my son is also what helps.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I can explain this because I'm sure you're wondering and everybody listening is wondering as well.
Yeah.
So I haven't had a child of my own, but my son is my partner's son. And we met when she was about 4 or 5 months pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And we just started messaging online.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing was really meant to come of it, but we clicked. We were thinking the same thing. We were quite often about to message the same thing. And so we caught up to just meet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I saw her and I fell in love instantly.
There we go.
She was, and of course, you know, a pregnant woman, man, they're glowing. They're absolutely vibrant, you know. So I was like, wow, it was like an angel coming towards me. And so, yeah, we didn't think anything was going to come of it. I asked her on a second date and she was hesitant to come because she, you know, was about to have a baby and she wasn't sure whether she wanted to have, like, throw a new relationship into the mix, complicate everything, possibly have a heartbroken.
Yeah.
And have that as well as possible postpartum depression and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, her friends convinced her to come out for a meal and, you know, what's the worst that can happen? You just don't go out with him again. It's simple as that.
Yeah.
But, about 5 months later, I'm in the delivery room.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what to do because, again, it's a brand new relationship.
Yeah.
And I am delivering this woman's baby.
Wow.
You know.
Wow.
So I checked out the business end for a second and went, no, I'm not man enough for that. So I decided to sit there and hold her hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I hadn't because the poor woman, the gas was making her sick. But she's boiling hot as well, so she's got the fan blowing on her, and I'm just – all I can smell is vomit wafting over me. And I'm trying to keep my composure while she delivers a baby. But, yeah, then he's born. He went off to NICU, and I looked at her and I said, so what do I do? What do you need me to do?
Mm-hmm.
She goes, we'll go with the baby. I'm like, are you sure? I'm like, yes, you need to be with the baby. Mum's here with me. I'm good here. You go with the baby. And so I went and I gave him I fed him and everything. And unfortunately, you know, she wasn't able to give any milk or whatever for whatever reason, couldn't lactate. So, I've given him his first bottle and then I've gone back down about to the delivery room about an hour later and I've said, so I haven't held him yet, but, you know, when can you come up so you can hold your baby? And she's like, what do you mean you haven't held him? Go up there and hold him. Okay, all right. Because again, I'm in a brand new relationship. Yeah. I don't know if it's the right thing.
Yeah.
Am I stealing a moment from her?
Yeah.
Am I, you know?
Yeah.
So I was the first person to hold my son, and just sitting there looking at his tiny little face, man, it was just beautiful. But it never really sunk in because, of course, you know, being a new dad, mm-hmm. you're doing the running around between the house and the hospital mm-hmm. and constantly in the aftermath. There's really just so much going on. You don't have time to take it all in. And so about 2 days later, Christine had come home from the hospital
mm-hmm.
and my son, he was still in NICU, and so that was hard, coming home and not having him with us. But at that point, I had a moment to have a quiet moment. I went out on the balcony,
mm-hmm.
and there's a song by Lynyrd Skynyrd, Simple Man.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I'd been listening to that, to the lead up to his birth, and that's all I wanted from him was just to be a simple man, just to be happy,
mm-hmm.
you know, mm-hmm. and be full of love sort of thing. And I sat there and I was listening to that song and I just sobbed.
Wow.
I completely just broke down and I sobbed. And that was the moment that I realized that, wow, I'm a dad.
Wow.
So.
Wow, wow.
So as for the delivery, you know, that was my experience.
Oh, wow.
But again, because it was a brand new relationship, Christine was really, really cool. She gave me a 12-month window. So it's like, look, you've got till his first birthday. You know, if you ever feel that things are too much, you can't handle this or anything, you can walk away and there'll be no hard feelings.
Wow.
And so for me, it wasn't even an idea.
Yeah, that wasn't an option.
No, it wasn't an option at all. And I got to his first birthday and I'm standing there at the grill flipping burgers. I've got him on my waist flipping burgers with the other hand. And I turned to her and I said, so is it too late to leave? She goes, no, that's it. You're locked in, buddy.
Man, number one, it sounds like you have an incredible partner. So kudos to her. Number two, what an amazing and unique story in that at this really critical moment in anyone's life, this new relationship that you're in with this, at that point, you 5 months in, right?
Yeah.
So still strangers in some way, shape, or form that she's like, go upstairs and hold my baby. Like, I mean, that speaks to, in those 5 months, she saw something in you that made her trust you with the most precious thing that she had. At that moment, have you considered that?
Not until this very moment. I hadn't even, it never even entered my mind. And to be honest with you, she's a crazy woman. If you really think about it,
she is crazy.
I mean, crying out loud, I don't think I would let her drive my new car if we'd only been dating 5 months, let alone. You know what I mean?
Like, well, what are you doing down here? Go upstairs and be with my baby. Wow.
That's it.
So that moment when you're giving your son his first bottle, do you recall some of the things that were going on in your mind? Were you feeling or thinking at in any way, shape, or form like, wait a minute, I'm a dad, but wait a minute, he's not biologically mine, but wait a minute. You know, was there any of that tension or was it just like, I'm a dad, period?
It was utter shock. And to be honest with you, I have not ever thought about this until you've just asked me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to if I was to go back and really think about it, it was there were elements of, wow, I'm a dad, but I'm not a dad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, am I just this kid's mum's boyfriend? Am I stepdad? Am I going to be Nate? Am I going to be dad? And then I had to quiet it all down and just sort of go and enjoy the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just, yeah, it was everything in like a second.
Yeah. 'Cause that moment is life altering in the best possible way. Right? 'Cause mm-hmm. I'm listening to you describe what it was like to just be there and giving him his first bottle and just, you're not even sure what you're thinking at that moment.
And, yeah, that's right.
And I'm thinking back to my experience when I first held my son. So we shared that in common. My wife couldn't hold our son at first and get that first skin to skin or feed him mm-hmm. first because she had a C-section. So, and he had sort of concerns that there was something going on in the womb. So he needed to be evaluated by so many people as soon as he came out. Mm-hmm. But here I am hovering over him and I'm talking to him and I'm singing to him and I'm holding him and I'm just like, what the hell is happening here? You know, I mean, just like everything changes at that time. And then to have it sink in and my wife and I, we say this all the time, when we left the hospital with him, it felt like there was something wrong with that. Like, wait a minute, mm-hmm. you guys are letting us leave the hospital with this creature? I mean, are you sure we're not doing something wrong here?
Yeah, I felt a little bit of that, but again, I'm the oldest of five. So for me, it just kind of came naturally. To put it this way, it felt like I'd done it before.
Mm, okay.
You know, I'm there in the NICU and the nurse has gone, would you like me to get him so you can home? Oh, no, I've got him and I've just scooped him up and cradled him. We've got his bottle. Do you want us to show? No, I'm good. Thank you. And got him feeding. You know, getting everything ready and getting it to the hospital for the day that he comes home and getting the car seat in the car. And I think the only one thing that I didn't excel at was putting that car seat in the car. I'm a welder and a fabricator. I can read technical drawings. But putting that thing in the car, I was screaming, I was yelling, I was swearing. I ended up pleading and begging that it would just work out. But it got there. But everything else for me just kind of came naturally.
Yeah, 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 dude. I forgot how to drive leaving the hospital that morning. You know, I mean, I sit in the car and I'm like, what am I supposed to do now? You know, I mean, it was just the weirdest thing because I'm projecting, I need to get this car on the road, but this time around, there's going to be a little creature in the back and we're getting on this very busy highway. If anything, so my mind immediately went from, listen, dude, you're chill, everything is going to be fine, to, oh my God, an 18-wheeler might run into the back of the car. So here what? I am.
All of a sudden, the world is just so dangerous and you see all these dangers that you never saw 2 days ago even.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah. You
know, and then all of a sudden, there it is.
Yeah,
no, it's daunting.
That was shocking and surprising to me. That
I hear you too, man. Like I wasn't even driving around corners. I was like just letting the car roll around the corner and then I'd take off again, you know.
I'm driving with two hands on the steering wheel. I'm driving in the middle lane, not even the middle lane. The slow lane and literally going speed limit and letting people pass me. I mean, there are cars tailgating me and I'm looking in the rearview mirror like, y'all better get off my tail. I am at speed limit. I am not moving. Or if the car was not getting from behind me, I move out of the way just to like the, because I need to get this child home safely. Mm-hmm. And man, that was one of the most immediate changes that happened. Just like, I'm a careful driver, but I also take calculated risks.
Yes.
I wanted no part of that with this kid in the car. Like, none whatsoever. Yep. I was so scared. The same, man.
I agree with you as well. I think that was the day that I started driving with 10 and 2, you know? Because beforehand, it was one hand on one the hand, wheel, the other hand on the window, and just cruise along.
Oh my goodness, that's amazing. Touch a little bit on what you said earlier. You said that you and your dad are alcoholics, but you have been sober for 3 days.
Yes.
Talk about what that journey has been like, and what influence does your son have in you making that decision?
He has all the influence in me making that decision. So I started drinking myself when I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I ever drank, I was blackout drunk.
Wow.
You know, it was at a friend's Christmas party. And I don't know how it worked. We were in high school, but this teenage couple had their own rental. Their parents had co-signed the lease or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I woke up the next morning at this Christmas party, my underwear on top of the Christmas tree. I'm passed out in the bathroom. Wow. I'm an absolute mess, you know, and I didn't learn my lesson, stupidly enough. But, yeah, you know, like having grown up around alcoholism, and I think a lot of people are like this who have grown up around alcoholism, they're going to go one of either way.
Mm-hmm.
They're either going to see their parent and go, I'm not doing that,
mm-hmm.
and they don't drink, and it's not a problem for them.
Mm-hmm.
For me, on the other hand, I saw it as a normal part of life.
Mm-hmm.
It's an everyday normal part of life, and that was my reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just picked it up and kept going with it. And, you know, my dad and I, we would drink together every night,
mm-hmm.
and we'd end up in punch-ups and altercations and police would be called and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were absolutely horrible for each other. And so in the end, I got it to a point, my alcoholism under control to a point, mm-hmm. I guess you could say,
mm-hmm.
where I've been skating the edge all this time. So I know what my limit is.
Mm-hmm.
And if I go over that limit, I'm gone.
Mm-hmm.
But if I cross that line, there's no coming back. I'm just going to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there's, as an alcoholic, you have weird justifications for your habit as well. So like my father, which I resent him for doing, he would drink in the garage mm-hmm. every moment he had.
Mm-hmm.
I've found myself in the afternoon, in the evenings after work, on the weekends, mm-hmm. in the garage, drinking by myself. Because in my mind, I'm not inside drinking in front of my son.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not giving that influence, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I'm depriving him of that time with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it got to a point where and the podcast has done a lot for me, where I've had a lot of personal growth, and it's opened my eyes a lot. And it's kind of like taking the red pill. Once you've learned something new, you can't unlearn it. You know, you can't unrealize it.
Yeah.
And I've realized that while I'm drinking, I'm not the best partner I can be. I'm not the best dad I can be. Mm-hmm. And I'm not the best version of myself that I can be. And so, yeah, I made a deal with my son where I gave him my $300 Bluetooth earphones. And I said, you hold on to them for a week. Mm-hmm. If dad doesn't have a beer, he gets them back after a week. Mm-hmm. But if dad has one beer, well, then you get them, take them back again. Mm-hmm. And so he's been really cool in supporting me like that, mm-hmm. because he sees it as having some sort of responsibility, which isn't a responsibility he should have, but he wants to take it on because he wants me to be better. He wants to help me. Mm-hmm. And I said to him, like, you don't have to do this because it's daddy's job to look after you. And he said, no, dad, I'll look after you too. We're a team. Our family is a team.
Wow.
And I was like, thanks, buddy. I love you too, mate.
And then you went to the bathroom and cried.
I had a moment. But the cool thing is he's keeping me accountable too. You know, he's 5 years old, and every afternoon he comes home and he's, dad, did you have a beer today? No, buddy. All right, good.
Wow.
Good, dad, good.
Wow, that's an incredible kid.
Yeah, no, he's awesome. So I'm not doing it for him. Mm-hmm. I'm doing it for me, but he's my motivation.
Yeah, yeah. Talk a little bit about that distinction, because there easily is a perception that, you know, our children make us better. They make us realize things like we were just talking about, like the world just became that much more dangerous the moment they arrive. So there's a sense where you say, because of that, you know, becoming a father, living outside of yourself, living for more than just yourself, you want to be better for your children. Mm-hmm. And that's a very easy place to land as a conclusion, right? I want to be healthier for my child. I want to be sober for my child versus I want to be healthier for myself. I want to be sober for myself. But you just said without even thinking about it twice, I'm not doing this for him. I'm doing this for me, but he's my motivation. So what's the difference between those two approaches in your mind?
Well, if I'm doing it for him, I don't want to do it. It feels like something I'm being forced to do, you know? Mm-hmm. If I enjoy drinking and I'm thinking in my mind I'm doing it for my son, it's not resent or anything, but it's like your heart's not in the right place. Mm. But see, if I'm doing it for me and my health, mm-hmm. my family are going to reap the positives from that. Mm-hmm. And so that's where, in a way, I am doing it for him. But he's the one keeping me motivated, mm-hmm. because I know he will reap the positives, mm-hmm. and I know that it's going to be better for me as well.
Yeah. So what I hear you saying is this is my responsibility first and foremost to me.
Yes.
Right? Because he doesn't deserve to have these memories of not being able to spend time with me because I'm in the garage drinking. So I need to correct that about myself, so that mm-hmm. he then gets to have more memories of us hanging out together and creating new memories.
Exactly. And another part of my motivation as well is the fact that I don't want him having that resentment that I hold towards my father mm-hmm. for all those missed opportunities throughout my childhood, all that time and bonding that I missed out with him. I don't want to repeat the sins of the father, to put it that way. Mm-hmm. I want to give him something I never had.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, that makes total sense, because that's another place where you and I relate, in that my motivation for how I interact with my son is not just because it just feels like it comes naturally to me, but there is also a sense of, you know, these are things that I can't say I've ever experienced with my own father. And I know intimately the hurt of not being able to have those experiences, not being able to have those memories. You know, I have a really good friend of mine whose father has become a father figure to me. And when I first started spending time in their house and just seeing how, you know, he relates to his dad as a son, how his dad relates to him as a father. I mean, they have such a beautiful friendship and relationship. I had a really hard time being in the presence of that because that's not something that I'm accustomed to. That was not my reality, you know? So I've had to learn from them what it means to have a healthy relationship between father and son. And what it, I got to see up close what a dad's just disposition is towards his children, towards his child. He's an only child, you know? So in that sense, I can relate to the sense of, yeah, I want to create a totally different experience for my son. I know I'm going to mess up, you know, he's going to grow up inevitably and have some memories where he's like, oh, dad, I wish you hadn't done that. Or I wish, you know, this would. But compared that to my experience with my father, I just want that to be a much healthier, much enriching relationship for my son.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I kind of had a similar experience with my best friend as well, you know, because he was adopted by his parents and he was an only child and he was really close with his dad. And I'd be over at his house every weekend and they'd be woodworking together or they'd be racing, you know, petrol RC cars up and down the street together. Or they were always talking about something and that's not something I had. And so I kind of relate with you where you're saying like it was almost like the Twilight Zone. It was something I really was not used to. In one way, it was nice because they treated me just the same as their own son. But at the same time, it just felt so foreign.
Yeah, for sure. Last thing I want to ask you is, are you in a situation where the biological father of your son is involved in his life? And if so, how is that dynamic between you and him being father figures to your son?
I consider myself lucky because, no, he's not involved and he's never been involved. But on the other hand, you know, I feel really bad for my son because his father found out that my partner's pregnant and he put his hands up and went, I want no part of this. I've already got kids. I don't want any more. Like, I want out. I don't want any. And so she went, okay, that's fine. I'll do it by myself. But that being said, there were a couple of times in the first 12 months where she had spoken to him briefly and he asked how she was doing, but he never asked about Eli, my son. And I think it's bittersweet because on one hand, I'm thankful that he's not there to break his heart. But you know, on the other hand, I feel bad for him because, you know, his dad doesn't want him, for lack of a better saying. And it sounds really bad saying that way, but I don't think anybody should have to ever deal with that. And that's one thing I'm going to have to talk to him about when he's older.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. Is there a part of you that wants to hide that from him? Or are you beginning to think about how, you know, there might come a day where you and your partner will have to talk to him about that?
Yeah, we will. We've always been pretty open about it. In the early days, it was discussed more because the situation was fresher.
Mm-hmm.
But he's never been around. So over the years, I've sort of filled that role
mm-hmm.
more and more and more in myself. Right, I've always been dad, but that feeling of I am dad has gotten stronger over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we are going to have that talk because I wanted to adopt him myself.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, I feel he has the right to know
mm-hmm.
and to make that decision himself, whether he wants me to adopt him or not, because it's his life.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel, as much as being his father, I can say I want to adopt him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to take that choice away from him.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we will end up having that discussion and don't know how we're going to tackle it, but I'm sure when the time comes, you know, the right words will be there.
Yeah, yeah. Man, that, again, I don't have any way of even thinking about what that's like. That's a really tough conversation, or that might potentially be a really tough conversation to have, right? Because it could go yeah. several ways. It could be, yeah, but I only know you as a dad. So why are we even talking about this other guy? Which to me yeah. would be an ideal situation. Like, wait, this is not even a conversation. He didn't want yep. anything to do with me. You know, thanks for telling me, but whatever.
Yep.
You're dad. So
that would be lovely.
Yeah. Like, so can we go out and do the thing that we said we were going to do, you know? Or it could go in so many other different directions. Yeah. I want to know who he is. I want to face him, you know, man to man. I want to sit down and ask him questions. I mean, that. Yeah. Yeah. That's.
Yeah.
That's
yeah. And I mean, look, he'd have every right. And if he wanted
sure.
to say, hey, I want to find him.
For
and
sure.
I want to ask him those
yep.
questions.
He has
I'd
the
help
right.
him
yes.
find the guy.
Yep. Absolutely.
You know, I would definitely help him. But hell, at the end of the day, you know, I love him and like he's awesome. And I guess the upside to his biological father not being involved is that he has like completely not been involved. We've not received child support.
Mm-hmm.
We've not had any correspondence with him, like nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So when the adoption does come around, he's essentially he's given up his parental rights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to cut a lot of that bureaucratic red tape.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you've been there. So it would seem like it's a no-brainer. You know, for this thing to happen. His fingerprints all over your life. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you talk about him with such glowing words and your face even lights up when you talk about him. So I can see and feel and sense just how meaningful he is to you.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to ask you to do a little thought experiment projecting into the future and you are watching your son graduate from high school going into college. Let's, for instance, I'm not going to go to the wedding ceremony yet because that would be the waterworks for the both of us.
Oh, for sure, man, definitely.
But picture yourself, I want you to talk to your son now, but projecting into the future as you've watched him grow to be his own man. And if there is one piece of advice, or if there's one reflection that you could share with him, what would you say to him?
Son, I'm absolutely proud of the man that you've grown to be, that you're a man of integrity and a man of your word, and not to let anybody in this life take that away from you, not to take your dignity, not to take away any part of you that makes you the beautiful person that you are today.
Yeah, and then he walks across the stage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
And I mean, even just now, man, I'm 5 years in and I'm just so proud of him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I tell him every day I'm proud of him.
Yeah. 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 I tell my son that those are words that I make sure he hears every night. I love you. I am proud of you.
Exactly.
And you are daddy's favorite son. And my wife is always whispering, he's your only son. I'm like, well, that's the point. Yeah. And you know, to know that this human being has been like, you have your fingerprints all over that too.
Yeah. You
know, like this is the works of your hands also. That's, yeah.
Yeah, it's, and in one way, like I look into somebody else's eyes, mm-hmm. you know, when I do not see myself in him physically, mm-hmm. but his mannerisms are me all over. He is his daddy's boy. You know? So, you're very right, man. I've muddied this kid up with all my fingerprints, bro.
Listen, my guy, thank you so much once again for sharing your story. Again, for your honesty, transparency, for your candor. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I look forward to being a distant witness to the amazing work that you're doing with your son. And wish you all the best moving forward, brother.
Thank you very much, man. Look, you're definitely one person I'm going to be keeping in touch with, brother.
I appreciate that, man. I appreciate that.